97.5, The Fanatic.
Welcome into 97.5 The Fanatic. I am Connor Thomas. So excited to be with you from 3 to 7 p.m. on this lovely Saturday evening. It is a lovely Saturday evening because once again, and Matt Menark, who's on the board, helping us out, producing for us for this program tonight. Once again, Matt, I just had just beautiful news fall into my lap the day before I have a hosting shift on the weekend. So this is like 6 solo shows, and every single time, you just get some nice breaking news. So the universe is being very kind to me, and it's being very kind to Philadelphia. Now, the universe is not the reason that Kaiser White is now a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. That belongs, the responsibility for that, rather, belongs to Howie Roseman and Kaiser White's representatives and them working out that deal to bring him to Philadelphia. But yes, the Eagles have gone out. They have signed their second linebacker of the free agency period this year. The first, of course, Hassan Reddick, Camden, New Jersey native, former Temple Owl. This area, very familiar with Reddick. People have been pining for him to be a member of the Eagles for a while. But Kaiser White now joins the team, and he will join that linebacker room. And I'm very excited about this move. I don't think he's the next Brian Urlacher or Ray Lewis or one of the super like star linebackers. I don't think he's completely transforming this defense. I don't think he's even their best linebacker acquisition because I think Hassan Reddick is more talented, even though Reddick will probably end up spending a lot of time at that defensive end spot. He still is an outside linebacker by trade, just really a general pass rusher. But Kaiser White is a nice piece, and he's a guy that played out on the West Coast. He's been with the Los Angeles Chargers for the entirety of his career. He's a young player in the AFC. So you may not be all that familiar with Kaiser White and what he brings to a defense. Well, I was looking through some comments on Twitter. I was doing a little bit of research on what Chargers fans say, because I think you can get national pundits, but we talk about this all the time here on 97.5 The Fanatic. When a story about Philadelphia goes national, you get these. Now, it's not everybody. There are some good national reporters out there for sure. But you often get these lazy narratives that are like half piecemealed together. Like, you don't really know the story. You just have this general framework of who the guy is and what's going on with him, this, that, and the other thing. I always find that you get very truthful, in-depth, immediate response from what the other fan base is saying. And I was seeing a lot of behind Derwin James and Bosa that Kaiser White was the third best defensive player on that Chargers team last year. Here's what he is. He's listed as a safety still on Pro Football Reference because he's a converted safety into a linebacker. What that says to me is, in coverage, this guy is going to be able to handle his assignments against running backs coming out of the backfield, against tight ends streaking up the seams, anyone in the slot. He's going to probably be the best coverage linebacker on this team this year because of that ability to play safety. And this is something that makes me very interested in Howie Roseman's strategy. And it's something that we have not really seen from him when going to the linebacker position. Now, first of all, the investment in the linebacker position at all is a nice change of pace, especially with Alex Singleton, who, for all of his limitations, he did lead the Eagles in tackles the past two seasons. He's gone now, or at least he's a free agent now, so they could always bring him back, but now this shows that they most likely will not be doing that. But it fills that hole, and it also, like, it shows you the versatility that Howie Roseman is looking for from players that he's employing in his linebacker room or as a pass rusher this year. So the two guys he's brought in, Kaiser White, a converted safety to linebacker, a guy that is a linebacker, but covers well and has that ability to kind of be a hybrid guy. Hassan Reddick is the same thing. He's a hybrid guy in the other direction where he plays a lot more up in the box. He can play as an edge rusher. He's very talented at getting to the quarterback. So it's nice to see not only the investment at the linebacker position, but the versatility of the guys that are being brought in. So now, Like, that's just facts. What we've gone through there is just factually what these guys are, where they've come from. They're now a member of the team. And the deal Kaiser White got, by the way, 1 year, could be worth up to $5 million with incentives and bonuses, everything like that. Not a very lucrative contract, a good deal for a player who just turned 26 on March 24th. So a happy belated birthday to Mr. White. But a young player on a one-year prove-it deal, getting $5 million, not breaking the bank. It's a nice move. It's great. But the question now is, what does this change about the strategy for the remainder of the offseason, especially the NFL draft? We already know that the Philadelphia Eagles are linebacker averse, especially at the top of the draft. Does this mean now that we can take N'Kobe Dean completely off the list? That we could take Lloyd completely off the list? That the first round linebacker is not in the cards for the Philadelphia Eagles? It's a fair question. And I'd argue that it does mean that. I think that you could just wipe linebacker off the board. I think, even though N'Kobe Dean seems like a great fit here, and he was a guy that I had my eyes on, I still do, as a very talented player out of the University of Georgia, I think it already would have been a surprise to me if the Eagles had actually ended up spending one of their top picks on a linebacker. So now, in my opinion, linebacker's off the board, at least in the first round. Now, you could go and get guys in the second or third or later. Of course, you got positions you got to fill out. That room very much still needs help. You're not just completely solving your linebacker problem by bringing in Kaiser White and then having Hassan Reddick spend part of his time playing outside linebacker at this team. But I just don't think the draft capital will be used by Howie Roseman. And I think that these were his two big signings to address the linebacker position. And this is about where this room's going to stay going into the 2022-23 season for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, 610-632-0975. I'm very interested how you out there feel about the Eagles addressing the linebacker position in the way that they have. Because I know a lot of people, and it's been for years. It's not just this year. It's not just because N'Kobe Dean is uber talented and it's a very strong defensive draft and the Eagles have three picks and they need to build a defense. But for years, people have been clamoring for Howie Roseman and the Philadelphia Eagles to select a linebacker high in the draft because they frankly, they haven't done it for decades now. So how does this make you feel? As a fan of the team, are you more comfortable with the veterans being brought in? Even though White is a younger player, Hassan Reddick, obviously a proven NFL player. And White, not unproven. He had 144 combined tackles last year for the Los Angeles Chargers. Incredible season, 90 solo. It was an up, so here's his progression. In 2018, didn't play very much, had only 17 combined tackles. Bumps that up in 2019 to 40. Bumps that up in 2020 to 77. Just goes out and basically doubles that number in 2021 in what was the breakout year of his career so far, but only one sack. So like I said, he's going to be kind of the mirror version of Reddick, where he's a hybrid guy and he's further back. But bringing in Kaiser White, bringing in Hassan Reddick, how do you feel about what the Eagles are doing to address the linebacker position? Would you have rather it been a younger player in the draft? And hey, maybe they still will. I feel that they won't. But would you have rather it been youth that you could build around? Or are you fine with what Howie's doing with these additional changes? And does this make you feel more comfortable as well? Because it does for me with what he's done so far this offseason and what has been a very quiet offseason for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, Matt, what are your thoughts on the Kaiser White signing? How do you feel about the linebacker position, the state of the Eagles linebackers? And are you comfortable going into the draft saying, hey, we don't really need to address this position with a premier pick anymore?
I love the signing. I think it's low risk, high reward. 1 year deal set up to $5 million. He's coming off his best year. He's another local guy too. So I think Howie's liking these local guys now. He went to Emmaus High School out in Macungie. And I don't think that we need to wipe off linebacker off the draft board, though.
Okay.
Because I think that it's still something that needs to be addressed. I don't think our edge rushers are strong enough to be able to drop Reddick back to the outside linebacker position too often. Maybe in a draft that'll change. But as of now, I think that Dean and Lloyd still should be on the board, maybe a little farther back, but I still think there still needs to be some focus on that. What I like most about this is you can make some of these young guys like Davion Taylor and Sean Bradley more depth instead of having to push them into the starting position because you don't have any other options. Because you'll have TJ Edwards now and White starting, and maybe Davion Taylor if
Redick plays the edge.
If he plays the edge, but it gives you more options. But I think I wouldn't completely push linebacker off the table in the first round, just depending on, I wouldn't trade up or anything. I wouldn't go out of my way, but if one
of those... Well, they're certainly not trading up for a linebacker.
No, I
think we all know the Eagles well enough by this point.
Right. But if one of them or both of them are still there, I still would give them consideration.
Yeah.
But I really like the signing. I think that he's coming off his best year. He's still really young. So I think because he's local and a lot of people like Redick, he knows the mentality in this area.
Right.
And I think because he's a local guy too, he'll know the mentality. He's not coming in from a quieter city or quieter area where he's not going to, because it takes a certain type of person.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be a tough place to play. We saw it. The most glaring issue was Carson Wentz, obviously. We don't need to go back into that. No, you're right. My thing is, I think they were already in the track record shows that the Eagles are tentative. Like they're timid when it comes to picking linebackers in the first round. They haven't done it. They're flat out allergic to it over the past couple of years. So it would have to be the perfect situation for them to go ahead and do that. And I think Howie is still uncomfortable with spending that high of a pick on a position he doesn't value and clearly hasn't valued, and they have not thrown money yet until this offseason. So I already had my doubts about them actually selecting one. Now, what I'm saying, let me clarify, because I know you kept saying don't take linebacker completely off the board in the first. I'm not taking them completely off the board for the draft. Like, if you go into, like, the second or third round and you've already addressed multiple defensive positions and you're like, hey, we got a linebacker that's graded very highly on our board that fell to us, I'm not saying do not pick a linebacker because you don't need help at the position. You do. And Kaiser White is on a one-year deal. It's very possible that he has a strong year for the Eagles and then the Eagles get outbid by somebody next year. I'd like to see them keep him, obviously, if he has a strong year, and we're moving far into the future. But a one-year deal does not preclude you from picking a younger player to have grow with the team more. This could very possibly be a one and done, even though he had a great year last year. Maybe the scheme doesn't fit. It's not a guarantee he's going to be here a long time. I just don't think you need to spend a premium pick on a linebacker with certain holes in the roster still. So right now, like lining up across from Darius Slay is someone who should not be lining up as a starting cornerback across from Darius Slay. Lining up as your starting safeties are, do you feel comfortable with Anthony Harris? Do you feel comfortable with Marcus Epps as your tandem back there? Like, there's other points, and your defensive interior, Fletcher Cox was cut this offseason. I know it was part of it was to reduce his salary, bring him back on a cheaper cap number to allow the Eagles to make moves like this Kaiser White move and give them more cap flexibility. But they felt comfortable cutting him to pay him less money because they know that he is not the Fletcher Cox of old. The defensive interior, we don't know what like Milton Williams is yet. They could still very much address that. I'd feel much more comfortable like now that Kaiser White has been signed and will be part of this team next year. My focus is no longer on the linebacker position. They need it, but there are a couple more areas of more concern, interior defensive line, safety, corner, that I'm looking at. And I still firmly believe that the Eagles are moving that first round, one of their first round picks. So they'll only draft two players, and that third one will be moved for some type of trade chip next year, some type of draft capital next year to keep a kind of hedge on the quarterback situation. So yeah, I'm looking more safety, corner, interior defensive lineman now when I look at the NFL draft and what the Eagles do. And of course, all of this can change with other signings. There's still some big name players out there, and the Eagles cleared a significant amount of cap space with the restructure of Darius Slay's contract. That was not for this Kaiser White $5 million deal. That belays a bigger move, and I talked about it in my last show last weekend on Saturday about how it could be Patrick Peterson. How it could be Tyrann Mathieu, who's still out there, who's a very, very talented safety. Guys like that are guys I have my eye on now, and that will carry over to the draft to the point where linebacker, no longer a top-tier priority. So 632-0975. Let me know what you think about the state of the Eagles linebacker position. Do you agree with me that first round pick, even if the Kobe Dean's there, I don't have to go linebacker? I'm looking at other positions now because for the time being, I feel comfortable with what the Eagles are doing. And part of that is not because I don't think N'Kobe Dean is talented, but because I think the Eagles are already a little bit anti-drafting linebackers high. This is more what I think they're going to do, not necessarily who the most talented player in the draft is. So do you agree with that? And also, how do you feel about Howie Roseman's strategy with the linebackers being like the hybrid type guys that we talked about? Are you happy that we're not going to see Alex Singleton trailing a tight end by 10 yards as he runs wide open or missing slot wide receivers? And I don't mean to just single out Singleton. There are other guys. You brought up Davion Taylor, Sean Bradley. Some of these guys who are not quite ready to be starters in the NFL looked really rough in pass coverage last year. They may get better, but it should be an exciting time to have a little bit more established of a defensive presence in the middle of the field there. So let's now take it from just the linebacker position and look at Howie Roseman's offseason as a whole. Because I know I was on the Mike Missanelli show as Tyrone Johnson filled in for Mike over the past couple days. I'll be doing that again Monday. So it was Tyrone, myself, Jen Scordo, of course. And we were talking about how stagnant the Eagles have been this offseason. Now it looks like they're just basically running back the same team as 2021, and they've made a lot of re-signings of players and bringing back players, the cutting of Fletcher Cox and bringing him back, the obviously re-signing of Derek Barnett. Now, here's the thing. They've been quiet, and it makes me a little bit nervous, but there's only one move so far this offseason that I have an issue with when it comes to the Eagles, and that's the signing of Derek Barnett back to a two-year deal, not a one-year. Like, you gave the guy who had 144 combined tackles last year for the Los Angeles Chargers and is just 26 years old and has proven he can play at this level a one-year $5 million deal. And you gave, I don't care about the money, but you give Derek Barnett a two-year deal? I don't know what in the hell they're doing there, and I don't know what is Howie Roseman's thought process when it comes to that. That's the only move, though, where I've vehemently disagreed with what Howie did. Outside of that, I think they're having just like a very quiet, solid offseason. But there's an issue, and I need to know the concern level because I know Tyrone Johnson was concerned about it. I'm very interested to hear your thoughts in a second, Matt, on how concerned you are about it as well. They've signed a couple players at linebacker, but they've still, we ran through the defensive positions that need to be addressed. Brandon Brooks retired. I know he didn't play this past year because of injury, really all that much. He went out early in the season. But it's still a long-term replacement you're going to have to find at that position. Jason Kelce is fighting off retirement. He'll be back for another year, but he's coming down to the end. There's need on the offensive line. Miles Sanders' contract comes up. There's plenty of spots to fill. And here's how I basically see the strategy. So imagine you gave Howie Roseman $10,000 and he walks into a casino at like 10 p.m. You're like, okay, you can do whatever you want with this from now until midnight. Whatever. You got all this time. You got hours. Go to a bunch of different tables, play some slots, do a bunch of different things. And what he does is he says no. And he sits still for an hour and 59 minutes. And then he walks over to the roulette table and he puts down $10,000 just on red. And that's all. That's what it feels like he's doing. The roulette table is the NFL draft. Like, he's had opportunities, and there are guys out there. He's created cap space to where the Eagles could pursue some of these other free agents. And not that they're not pursuing them, because clearly they just made a move. They signed Hassan Reddick. They've re-signed other guys. They have done some things, and I'm sure they've contacted plenty of guys. But it almost feels like Howie sees the three first-round picks. He sees the opportunity. He says, I'll just wait till the draft, and I'll take my chances. I'll put all of my eggs into the NFL draft basket, and I will rebuild my team that way. Here's the problem, right, Matt? Howie Roseman kind of stinks at building through the draft, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So how do you feel about, if that is the strategy, which is what it seems like it is to me, the quiet offseason, minimalist moves, like bring back everybody that you had that you comfortably can, sign a couple more guys, but the big move is for Howie Roseman to try and rebuild this defense through the NFL draft. Are you comfortable with that? Because I'm not. It makes me nervous as hell. I get why, like, I get the strategy. There is a plan to it. It's not like he's just going all willy-nilly, like, hey, we'll sign a guy here, and I'm not really thinking about adding anybody at safety. Like, he has a plan. I just don't trust the way he's executing it and the medium he's using to add players. How do you feel about, if that is indeed the strategy, which it seems like it to me, how does that make you feel about the prospects for the NFL draft and the Eagles offseason?
Oh, that's tough. If that's his strategy to put all his eggs in the draft basket, he better have something that's foolproof, because if he's freeing up all this money because he thinks he's eyeing something that he might be able to do during the draft, like, I don't know, trade one of those first for something that he sees from a team and have that money available for that player, then he better be sure that something is going to be set. Because, yeah, all these minimal signings and re-signings of all these decent players, I mean, Eagles didn't re-sign anybody great of their own team. Corey, yeah, Cox, yeah, if he bounces back, but he's getting older. Barnett, yeah, I mean, that Kaiser White signing, I think he maybe timed that so we kind of forget about that terrible.
Oh, I'm not forgetting.
Oh, nobody's
I'm not forgetting about
that,
Derek Barnett.
That's for sure, because that was I still everybody's still confused about that for sure. But yeah, it's a little worrisome.
Yeah, and notice I said roulette table when I used that example. I could have picked a lot of casino games. I could have picked like craps or blackjack or poker or something. No, there's no, like, you cannot sit down at the NFL draft and you can't, like, count the cards. There is no foolproof, like, no Rain Man, no The Hangover, no 21, nothing, none of those movies. Like, this is roulette. It's just a spin for Howie Roseman. It's luck of the draw because he hasn't been that good. And not only that, but you also have to figure out what everyone else is doing. I guess as I say that out, it sounds more like a poker game, and that's really what it is. It's a game of trying to figure out who's going to be available and where. But it is not, there's no foolproof method to adding through the draft. So, like, if you sign a player, you've already seen him play, you have a veteran that you're bringing in, and you know essentially what you're getting. The draft is totally, totally a different animal, especially when it comes to Howie Roseman. And that, it just makes me nervous. He could hit on every single pick. It's possible. I say that to myself all the time. I said it to myself when I was betting on the college tournament, the NCAA March Madness. What if I just hit every bet? I guess it's possible. Someone out there does it, so it's not outside the realm of possibility technically, but it makes me nervous to look at the NFL draft as the be-all, end-all for this offseason with the minimalist approach that Howie Roseman's taken. So, 610-632-0975. Let me know how you feel about that strategy, as it seems that the NFL draft is going to be the biggest way for the Eagles to add players this offseason as opposed to the free agent signing. But on the other side, Matt, one of the greatest moments in sports history, yes, in sports history in general, happened last night in Philadelphia. And we've got to show the people who pulled it off a little bit of love. That on the other side, I'm Connor Thomas, Matt Menark on the board, with you from 3 until 7 p.m. right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
We're back here, 3:31 on 97.5 The Fanatic. Connor Thomas with you until 7 p.m. Talking a little bit of Eagles in that opening segment and the signing of Kaiser White and what it does for the team. A couple things I forgot to mention, though. Austin Krell, who covers the Sixers for the Painted Lions, also contributes to USA Today for the NBA. He'll join us at 4:30 to talk a little bit about the Sixers' West Coast trip. We're going to get into that a little bit later in the program, talk about the couple games they've already played and what they have finishing out with the 9 remaining games on their schedule. And also, hugely important, I can't believe I forgot, today's my dog's birthday. So happy birthday to my little puppy, Bolt. He's 5 today. You guys know how pet birthdays go. They feel like part of the family because they are. So got to give a shout out. I know he listens and he loves all of the Philadelphia sports talk. He's a very avid Philadelphia sports fan. So
it's good. Bolt, you said?
Bolt.
Would you get
B-O-L-T.
Him?
We got him from a shelter out in like...
No, what did you get him for his birthday?
Oh, what did I get him? Don't tell him, but nothing yet because I'm not going to see him until Monday. So as of right now, nothing, but I'm going to stop by. I always stop by a pet store on the way over and pick up a bunch of toys and some new treats and everything. He's spoiled. He's got like this whole... He's like a 12-pound min pin. And he has a bin like four times the size of him that's just packed with toys. And he's got like a whole cabinet of like treats and everything. So yeah, he's got enough. You can never spoil a dog too much, though. They're great.
So you could probably take something out of that cabinet and re-gift it to him. And
no, you come on. You can't re-gift. It's a violation. He'll know. He's a very smart dog. He'll understand. Be like, you got me this for Christmas or you got me this last year. No, he'll know.
Stop listening to your show.
No regifting. Yeah, well, he's already going to be mad at me because he heard me just say that I haven't gotten him anything yet, so I apologize for that. But yeah, had to give a birthday shout-out to the pup. Now, like I was talking about on the other side as we went into the break, a huge moment in sports history last night. Do not let this be understated, and I refuse to allow it to be, because sometimes we're prisoners of the moment. We think the last win is the biggest win every single time. It's a natural inclination in sports because we follow sports to get excited about things, to evoke emotion, to enjoy an experience. Well, this is not one of those times where it's recency bias. What St. Peter's men's basketball team did last night in winning in the Sweet 16, moving on to the Elite Eight, being the first 15 seed to ever do it as they take down Purdue. Just beautiful that it happened at the Wells Fargo Center here in Philadelphia. It's amazing. It's one of the great stories in sports history, what they were able to do. Shaheen Holloway, the coach of that team, he, of course, famous for his time with Seton Hall when they made an improbable run, another Jersey school. And listen, St. Peter's, it's already an incredible story. Like that... At face value, is so, so cool to see a 15 seed just run through the path that they have and beat some of these top teams in a row to move on to this. It's a magical run, but also the ties that they have to do it in Philadelphia with a coach that has been from the area and around the area and seems like an amazing coach and has to be to get players of that caliber. All due respect to the players who are doing an amazing job, especially defensively for St. Peter's throughout this tournament so far. But he's not working with what Purdue has or what Kentucky has. He's making the most out of players that were turned down by these other institutions. It's incredible. And for the team to be a local team as well, being from Jersey City. Now, they're not, obviously, and there have been jokes, oh, is St. Peter's a Philly school? Because that's always the question about Villanova being outside the city on the main line there. But no, it's not a Philly school, but it is a Jersey school. It is an area school. There should be, I understand, rooting for Villanova. And that was a whole conversation we had on the Mike Missanelli show yesterday about why people refuse to do that sometimes here in Philadelphia. But there should be no reason, short of them facing off against Villanova, that you shouldn't be rooting for St. Peter's. They're a darling of the tournament, and they absolutely deserve love because it cannot be overstated how big of a moment that is. That's one of the most improbable wins, and this is one of the most improbable runs that we've ever seen. It is the most improbable run that we've ever seen in the NCAA tournament, but one of the most improbable in all of sports. And in that vein, Matt, I want to open up our side topic for today. Your favorite. This doesn't have to be the longest odds or anything. It doesn't have to be the most impactful. It's the most impactful to you. When you call in today, you can call in with this at 610-632-0975. I'd love to hear what your favorite Cinderella story is of all time. And here's the thing about Cinderella stories. This may not be one. I think that name's a little bit of a misnomer when it comes to teams that are successful. Now, they still got a ways to go, St. Peter's, and they probably won't win at all. But it's in the story of Cinderella. She goes ahead and it turns back into a pumpkin. The carriage turns back into a pumpkin and she turns back into the lowly, what is she, a step sister or something in the actual story? I haven't watched Cinderella in forever.
I don't know.
But
the
end is they turn back from greatness into their old just normal selves. no guarantee that these teams always turn back. When you win it all, you are no longer Cinderella. You have stayed that way forever, but I'm not caught up on my my fairy tale. So a little bit off base. The bottom line is I'd love to hear your favorite Cinderella stories from sports history in general. So Matt, before we take calls on it, what is your favorite Cinderella story of all time?
Oh, I'm going to have to put some thought to this. This so far might, because you, when you think of Cinderella stories, mostly you think of college basketball. That's what pops out in your head the most. I mean, Florida Gulf Coast, that was fun.
Yeah.
To watch Murray State. I mean, now they're a formidable, every year they're a good college basketball team, but they didn't start that way.
Which is what John Morant does for a program when you put out a player of that caliber. But
So, I don't know. I'm going to have to give it a little thought. Right now, I mean, you can't. Yeah, this is amazing what they're doing. And they might, you don't know. I mean, they might win it all. They might. Imagine if they win this next game, they're in the Final Four, Duke wins, and in St. Peter's, number 15 seed is the team that gets to send Krzyzewski home.
That would be
amazing.
A hell of an end to a career.
That would be the best way. I'm sick of seeing him. He needs to go.
So my dad was kind of a Duke fan. I was born in North Carolina. My dad was in the Air Force, and he was stationed down there when I was born. My younger brother was also born down there. So he was a Duke fan because it was the closest college in proximity. And so I have followed Duke. I do have a little bit more of a soft spot for Coach K than your average college basketball fan. Not that I'm a avid Duke fan. I don't really have a team for any college sport, but I have a little bit of a softer spot for him, which is why I may be feeling this way. But I would feel almost sad if he went out like such a great coach losing to a 15 seed.
I wouldn't.
Like, that's just.
I think that would be great.
That would be such a tough way to end a storied career, is to lose the biggest upset in the history of college basketball. Like, that would, it would be something. I mean, it'd be a hell of a story on both sides. But that's what these great stories, these great runs, these improbable moments give us. They give us the opportunity for even more improbable moments, especially talking about the tournament. So think about your favorite. I'm still going to hold you to it. I need your favorite Cinderella moment at one point. Moment, story, team, player, whatever. The one that means the most to you, and you can call in with that. Again, at 610-632-0975. But of course, we're also talking Eagles offseason, the moves that they've made. Alex has been waiting patiently. So Alex in Mount Laurel will be our first caller from 97.5, or from Mount Laurel on 97.5 The Fanatic. Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, man. Doing great.
So I just want to talk about, well, first with the linebacker signings, I love what Howie's doing. I really think we got some flyers all around the edge and out on defense. But I'm not really big on any of these free agent wide receivers, and I still think that's a big issue for us right now because Rager and JJ. And I really like Howie to make a call down to Jacksonville for Marvin Jones. So what do you guys think of that?
It's interesting. Here's the thing. So the trade is definitely the way. If they're going to add a wide receiver that's not through the draft, it's certainly going to be by trade, because the wide receiver market is absolutely crazy this offseason. Starting with what Davante Adams went and got from the Las Vegas Raiders. You saw what Tyreek Hill did to get down to Miami. So you don't want to go ahead and sign any of these guys. Even Marquez Valdez-Scantling just got $30 million? In a contract, so you don't want to re-sign. You're going to big-time overpay because of where the market's set. Jones is interesting. He's got, 55 touchdowns over the course of an eight-year career. So I don't know. I really think that he would help the team, but as far as the trade pieces, I don't see them moving picks this late for him, and I think if they were going to go ahead and acquire one of these wide receivers, you would have already heard more about some of the additional free agents. I really think they're fine with Zach Pascal being their only offseason addition at the position through free agency or via trade. And that's another position that I think Howie's just going to wait to and address during the draft. Now, do you have, because it sounds like you're very locked in on the receiver position, Alex, do you have a favorite wide receiver in the upcoming draft that you want to see him target?
I really like both Ohio State wide receivers, Olave and Garrett Wilson, but I don't really know if we're going to be able to get him, but I would love Garrett Wilson.
I'm totally with you on both those guys. I think Olave's gone. Yeah, I'm sorry. What did you say there?
I feel like Garrett Wilson will work perfectly with Devonta and Jalen.
Yeah, I mean, both of those guys would be a good fit. I appreciate the call, Alex. I mean, those are both high-caliber wide receivers. Ohio State, a college that puts out solid players. I mean, it's a power football school. That's the thing. I'm kind of at the point with Howie Roseman, and he proved it last year, how it can work with Devontae Smith and Landon Dickerson. Go to the best teams in college football and just go get that guy. Marvin Jones, by the way, who Alex brought up, just to give you the contract information. So he is an unrestricted free agent after the 2022 season. So there'll be 1 year left on his deal. He's currently owed $4.95 million in 2022. So not a huge number at all. He has that out that he did not exercise this year with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So it's possible. It could be an option to go ahead and call Jacksonville to make that move. But again, I see Howie Roseman is more focused on the draft right now. The only other addition that I could see prior to that is probably a back end of the defense, a defensive back, whether it be at safety or corner signing. And I still think that that's part of the reason why they cleared up the cap space that they did with Darius Slay's move. Also, I apologize, in the opening segment I was talking about Alex Singleton. He has signed with the Denver Broncos, so he is not available to be brought back. Like I said, I don't think the Eagles have any interest, even if he was available, because they are now rolling with Kaiser White and Hassan Reddick as part of that linebacker room to take on the 2022-23 season. So, with the Eagles and the draft and the wide receiver position, it's very interesting. It brings up another spot, and thank you, Alex, for giving me a great segue into what I wanted to get into next. It brings up another spot that the Eagles do need help at. I don't know how you feel about the Pascal signing, Matt, but for me, it's underwhelming. It's a wide receiver that Pro Football Focus, which you can only put so much stock into that. They're kind of all over the place with their stats and what they put out. But they had him ranked lower than Jalen Reagor last year as far as in their wide receiver yearly rankings. So it doesn't move the needle for me. They still very much need to add somebody at that position too. So I'm gonna tie your hands a little bit. They're not getting three picks because I do think they trade one. But just now with the Kaiser White signing and with Hassan Reddick already being here, bringing back Derek Barnett, everything they've done this offseason to create the roster as it currently stands, you have two first-round picks. What position, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, are you addressing? What positions, rather, are you addressing with those two first-round selections?
I think their first priority should be cornerback. They need somebody opposite Darius Slay. That isn't just a throw-in, that a mediocre cornerback. They need to have two stud corners on the outside. That's one. They do need a wide receiver, but I think they need a veteran wide receiver. If they get one of these top receivers in the draft, fine, but I think they need a veteran receiver more than they need another rookie receiver. And I think you can never have too many edge rushers. They were so down in sacks last year, or even a defensive tackle. So somewhere on the defensive line and cornerback, I think, are the two priorities. Because Cox, they re-signed him, but they're going to need a replacement for him. So now's the time to do it, if he's going to be around one or two more years, to find somebody that could slide right in when he finally is gone.
Yeah, it's interesting. See, I think they like Milton Williams more than we've really seen so far. We haven't seen all that much from Milton Williams because he splits time with some great defensive interior linemen. We're going to see more as Fletcher Cox ages out of the defense and whether or not they move on from him after this season. Even though they brought him back for this one, it's very possible this could be his last year as a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. But they could like Milton Williams more, and they already spent a second-round selection on him last year. Second-rounder, right? Yeah, let me double-check on that. But they spent one of their top picks on him last year. So for me, the positions that I need to see addressed with those first-round picks are cornerback and safety. That's it. Those are the two.
Lock it in right there. Pick the best corner. Pick the best safety. I don't care which one you go after first. I don't care which one they are because I trust them to evaluate those players. There are players out there, of course, I like. I would love Sauce Gardner to be a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't think he'll be there. I would love Derek Stingley to be a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't know that he's going to be there. So we'll have to go ahead and see who's actually available. But those are my two. So I want to pose that question to you listening out there. You have two picks in the first round, assuming that Howie's going to trade one of the three to create that extra space next year, to get the extra draft capital next year, to potentially make a move to replace Jalen Hurts if he ends up not having a strong second season as the Eagles' starting quarterback. So you have two picks. What are the two positions you are addressing with those two picks? 610-632-0975. And also, if you have a player at those positions, if you have a specific player that you're in love with, absolutely go ahead. If you say, and anything's on the table, you can call in. I know Tyrone Johnson, we were talking about it the other day on air. He's a huge Malik Willis fan. He says if Malik Willis is there 15 when the Eagles make their first pick, go ahead and pick him. Don't start him this coming year because he's a young player. Let him sit. Give Hurts another year. Give Minshew time as the backup. But go ahead and get the quarterback. If you have a quarterback you love, that's fine. If you have a wide receiver, hell, you might like a punter from San Diego State. The punt god might be your guy. Whoever it is for you, love to hear from you. 610-632-0975 about your positions. Matt wants to go defensive line or safety or corner, something like that. We're both in kind of the same vein. I'm restricting it to just safety and just cornerback and picking the best available options there. That's how I see the best path forward through the NFL draft. And of course, we're still talking about the thought process behind just using the draft, not really adding all that much through free agency, running back a lot of the same players from the 2021 team that had a lot of trouble in the playoffs with the Buccaneers, that had an easy schedule but did make the playoffs. How you feel about relying on the draft, especially with a general manager like Howie Roseman, who has not proven to be the most apt drafter in his time as general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's go to Joe in Deptford next. Joe, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
How you doing, Connor?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Here's the deal. When you build from within, you take the best defensive lineman or the best defense offensive lineman for that matter. And when you're picking a defensive back, for instance, if you're going to take a guy from Georgia, Georgia had 49 sacks. So you don't know if their linebacker is any good, and you don't know if their defensive backs are any good because they have ferocious pass rushes. Same thing with LSU and guys like that. So I'll give you a history lesson. When the Jets took, what's his name, the best defensive back, they had 19 sacks.
What, Jamal Revis. Adams?
No, when they took Revis.
Oh, okay. Revis, yeah.
Yeah, so Revis, the University of Pittsburgh had 19 sacks that year, and Revis can cover anybody even though there was no pass rush. So your best players, and the Eagles really need, they need another defensive lineman to replace Fletcher Cox. If from Northern Iowa's there, you see how they have appliances on the left side? You put appliances on the right side, too. And then when you have that running game, that play action, it's unbelievable. And as far as Pascal, he's a great blocker. And if he's just a little bit of an upgrade, let's say he catches 14 more passes. What's the name? Had 31 catches this year. Rieger had 31. Rieger needs a scenery. It's a sin. Once they picked Smith last year, that kid was lost.
Right, but like, Joe, I just hate hearing the, I'm tired of the receiver is a great blocker, and I know, not to take anything away from it, blocking is important, but I want these guys that can catch, I want these guys that can score touchdowns. We already got a great blocker, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, right?
Center. This guy is a great fit for the Eagles. I ripped Howie Roseman. I mean, when he took Danny Watkins, I thought my head was going to explode. You're an RV kid, right? Is that what you're?
I am, yeah.
Okay, you know who I am then. So long story short, the guys like that, you can't take 25-year-olds and 26-year-olds. That was his mistake. They took McDougal. He was 25 years old, and that was a stupid mistake. Then they took Watkins, who was 26. These are men playing against boys. So you got to keep guys, you know, within 22, something like that. But again, your defensive backs got to be – when you look at your defensive backs, make sure you're not getting a guy – that had ferocious pass rushes. That's how you can evaluate a guy.
I got you, Joe. I appreciate it. It's a fair point by him. Now, I think when you have a team like University of Georgia where that defense was super talented, I think that's kind of the exception to the rule that Joe was using, where like N'Kobe Dean, despite having Jordan Davis on that pass rush, is still an outstanding linebacker. Was he covered up at points? Some of his mistakes could have been covered up, certainly, by how good that defensive line was. An uber-talented defense top to bottom. I don't think the pass rush being good means that the defensive backs cannot be good, but it is an interesting point he brings up about some of those players that play on the back end of the defense, the defensive backs, safeties, and corners, that can be look a lot better than they actually are because of the ability of other players around them. It brings back the original point of, like, it's tough to feel comfortable with Howie Roseman having so much resting on this draft and this draft class. Even though it's talented, you have to really trust your GM, and he has not really proven that he deserves that trust when it comes to the draft. He's done great with contracts. He's done pretty well with signing. He's very good with trading draft capital, but with actually making the picks, you still need to see more from him in order to feel comfortable with this being the strategy. But it looks like that's the direction that the Eagles are going for the 2022 offseason. Now, we've been talking Eagles football, but the Sixers have had a great road trip so far. They've only got 9 games left in their season. We're coming down on the final stretch, and they face a huge test tomorrow night in Phoenix against the Suns. But I'll tell you why we shouldn't be putting too much stock, one way or the other, good or bad, in their final 9 games before they head into the playoffs. 610-632-0975. Connor Thomas with you until 7 p.m. And on at 4:30, again, we'll talk to Austin Krell about the Sixers. We'll have that coming up in the next hour. Matt Minark on the board. We're with you until 7 right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Joining us now to talk a little Sixers basketball, Austin Krell, an NBA reporter for the Painted Lines, covers the Sixers for them, contributes for USA Today, did a great job of covering the James Harden sweepstakes, what ended up with the James Harden-Ben Simmons trade at the NBA trade deadline this year. Does a great job, great follow on Twitter at NBA Krell, and he'll join us now on the Comcast Business Hotline. Hey, Austin, how you doing this afternoon?
Going on, Connor. Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. Appreciate you making the time on this weekend. So the Sixers are on a big West Coast road trip. And I really wanted to get your thoughts first and foremost. Huge game tomorrow night against the Phoenix Suns. The Clippers, you're not really going to learn all that much from them. The Lakers are sliding. But this is a big game. What's the biggest thing that you're looking for in this Sixers-Suns game that you can take away to tell us about what the Sixers could have ahead of them as far as a playoff run?
So I think, number one, just how James Harden responds to some of the adversity that he'll face against more defensive-minded wings like Mikal Bridges. You know, I think Cameron Johnson, sorry, is going to be out from what I'm seeing on the Phoenix Twitter. But like Jay Crowder, you know, they have a lot of wings on that team that can guard multiple positions, so. You know, he had no problem getting to the rim last night against a Clippers team that had no wing defenders that could stop him. But let's see what he does against a more playoff-like defense, because that's what really matters at this point in the season. I also think that, like, we're going to see what Doc has up his sleeve for the backup center. It's obviously, he's gone with DeAndre Jordan every chance he can get. But I'm curious to see how fast it goes downhill with DeAndre Jordan, because he just has looked unplayable, quite frankly. And what they do with defensively with him on the floor against a team that has the guard prowess like Booker and like Chris Paul, what they do against the Sixers, when he's on the floor, because I think that's telling as to for what life will be like for the Sixers in the playoffs when Jordan is on the floor.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's something that they had trouble with, even with Embiid last year against the Hawks. The kind of Trae Young penetration and the lobs to Capella were really, really tough if you don't have someone with legs under them who could defend it well. And yeah, I'm seeing what you're seeing with DeAndre Jordan. Now, I'm glad you brought up the James Harden ability to exploit the Clippers last night and what he'll be like in the playoffs against more defensive-minded wings. So I want to ask you, who's the James Harden that we should be expecting come playoff time? Is it going to be more the aggressive, have a strong first half like we saw last night against the Clippers, where he was putting up more threes than we've seen him shoot, where he was being more aggressive scoring-wise? Or is he going to revert back to being more that facilitator that we've come to know him as in a short time here in Philly?
Well, I think the one thing that we can say from experience of recent star, you know, ball handlers like they had with Jimmy Butler was there was an extra gear to hit in the playoffs. Jimmy was relatively passive at points during the regular season when he was a Sixer, and then as soon as the playoffs started, he kind of took over and said, you know, I'm gonna dictate this thing. So I think right now Harden's kind of trying to feel out his teammates, obviously establish a chemistry and a relationship. But I think more than that, a trust. He wants his teammates to trust him as the primary, you know, ball handler that came in mid-season. So I think you'll probably see the aggression as a scorer dial up once the playoffs begin. It's anyone's best guess as to what his health will look like. I think right now my biggest concern with him is not that he's missing necessarily, but that he's missing short on a lot of his shots. And to me, what that means is he doesn't have his legs under him. And why would that be? Because he's battling well-documented hamstring issues. So if those are going to still be there, it doesn't really, you know, matter who you play. If he can't get around anybody, he's going to be resorting to step back jumpers a lot. And if he's missing those, there's a pretty high, level of risk to his play, because if you're missing short, offenses are going to get out and run, and the Sixers are not a good transition team. So that could really put a hurting on the Sixers if he can't get anything to fall and they're constantly having to run and get back on defense.
Yeah, I totally see what you're saying there, and we know the transition defense has been rough for the Sixers this year. So I'll ask you then, because I know they just rested both Embiid and Harden in Miami against the Heat in a game that the Sixers were able to pull off and win, but how do you see the rest going the rest of the way for the two big guys for the Sixers? Do you see Harden and Embiid sitting another game together, sitting separately? Do you think Embiid's going to try and play out the rest of the way? How do they manage the load for those two guys?
I think part of the storyline that maybe Embiid wouldn't admit to himself, but I think is certainly at play, is you're in the home stretch of the MVP race, and you know Nikola Jokic is still there. I think the Nuggets recently have struggled a little bit, and you know, some of their recent games where they've dropped back to, I think, seventh in the standings, or maybe sixth in the standings. I forget exactly where they are. But perhaps he's sensing an opportunity to really put Jokic away for the MVP. So maybe Joel is a little more resistant to sitting. But I think right now, like the end of March through April, they have Detroit, they have Charlotte, they have Indiana twice, and they have Detroit again to close the season. So, I mean, they have a relatively easy schedule to close the season. Wouldn't surprise me if they got their guys some rest before the playoffs started. I also think that they'll be jockeying for the positioning down the stretch as well. But I think another factor here is you look at the teams that they're looking at for first round, second round matchups. I don't know that this year, the being the one seed is, you know, a glorious opportunity. You may have to play the Nets in the first round, which good luck to you. And then you may have to play, if you get past the Nets, the Celtics in the second round, which, again, good luck to you. So, I mean, perhaps they're sitting where they are and they're thinking, you know what, we're pretty happy with where we stand right now relative to our playoff competition. Maybe we start resting these guys more. And you can certainly see them do that. Maybe they do it more so against teams that are lesser down the stretch. But I think you probably see, if I'm going to guess, maybe Harden rests a little more, and Embiid plays a little more. Do they rest them together? Great question. I would probably be inclined to say maybe you get one more rest game together, and then the other game, like
and Harden, split the others.
Yeah.
I got you. Well, that's perfect. I didn't give you notes before this one, but you're leading me perfectly down my sheet I have. There are things that I want to ask you. Again, we're talking with Austin Krell, covers the Sixers for the Painted Lines, contributes to USA Today on the NBA, talking to him on the Comcast Business Hotline. Now, do you have an ideal seed in your mind that the Sixers should be shooting for? Because I saw on your Twitter, that's at NBA Krell, you should absolutely follow Austin. He's a great follow with all the Sixers inside info you could need. You talked about the one seed maybe being a reward that teams do not want. Do you have an ideal seed that the Sixers should be shooting for in your mind?
I think for them, like, the three seed is fine. You know, you get the home court in the first round against whoever you play. And Cleveland, you've had their number all year long. Plus, they're dealing with an injury themselves. Jared Allen's out, who is their center. So I think Embiid would have basically all powers to get to the rim whenever he wants against Cleveland. But I think, like, right now, you look at the two seed. The winner of the 7-8 game between Brooklyn and Toronto, is a two seed matchup. So you look, there's a scenario there where you play the Nets, which is not going to be, you know, a pleasant experience.
Yeah, I'm good on that.
Yeah. And even if the Nets lose, you're playing Toronto, who has beaten you twice in your building this year. And last time they did it, by the way, they were without Fred VanVleet and then, you know, other players. So they pose some risk. I think right now the best thing for you to do is you see Cleveland and you see Chicago in, you know, the five, six spots. You've had their numbers all season long. That they've largely flatlined down this stretch. They have guys who are not playoff experienced. That's a pretty confident matchup, I think. The reason I say the one seed isn't particularly favorable is there's a chance of Kyrie Irving being out for the Toronto playing game if they find themselves in that spot. You lose to the Raptors and you win the next one. Guess what? You're playing Brooklyn as the eighth seed. And then if you make it past them, you're playing the Celtics as the four seed. Celtics, by the way, have the second best point differential in the NBA. So they're blowing doors off teams right now, the Celtics. So even if they had a slow start and they're coming along now, it isn't that they're winning. It's that they're winning by substantial margins, and they look every bit as good as their record and their stats show they are.
Yeah, they're a dangerous team, and you're absolutely right there. The one seed could be a tough first couple of series for them. I'm with you that I think that they should be shooting for that three seed. That's also where my mind goes. So with that in mind, you got 9 games left. There may not be as much of a premium on winning them. Not that they're going to tank out to get to the three seed by any means, but that they may have games where it's like, okay, it's not the worst thing if we rest Joel, rest James Harden, and if we fall down a couple seeds, well, it may work out better for us. With that in mind, there's going to be opportunity for some of these fringe bench players, the Paul Reeds, Isaiah Joes, Paul Millsap, who hasn't gotten a lot of run since DeAndre Jordan was signed here. Who's the one bench player that you'd like to see more of in the final 9 games that you think could get a look and end up being a part of the playoff rotation come mid-April?
I think that's a very tough question to answer because I don't think anyone is particularly favored to get in the rotation. Like, look at it this way. They gave Isaiah Joe a lot of chances this year. Probably most of between Bassey, between Paul Reed, and between Isaiah Joe, he's certainly got the most chances. The reason he's not in the rotation is because he hasn't been able to make shots consistently. And, you know, Doc likes his veterans. He has 2 veteran backup centers who I would think would get priority over Paul Reed or Charles Bassey. I think Paul Reed's energy and his effort on a nightly basis are incredible. And, you know, those are the type of things that should be rewarded. And that those are the things that motivate players to continue to go all out and continue to grow. But I can kind of see, like, why Doc would be a little bit hesitant to give Paul Reed minutes. Last night, they Clippers ran an after timeout play where they basically just ran a little decoy for to pull Reed out of the paint, and that opened up a back door for them to cut, and they got a dunk at the rim. So those little like blips, still, you know, those showcase moments where you're like, well, I can see why, you know, Paul Reed wouldn't exactly have Doc's trust. But I think if you're looking for a hole on this team that would need to be, you know, prepared in the playoffs, it's definitely going to be the backup center minutes. Not just because of, like, the fact that Jordan's old and he can't hold his own, but rather these offensive teams, they're going to want to switch, and they're going to want to get you in spots where you're most vulnerable. And the Sixers, against teams that have good shot creation, like the Nets, like the Celtics, they have wings and guards that feast on people guarding in space. Jordan, as he currently is, cannot guard anybody in space. So right now, your best option behind that is going to be Paul Reed or Bassey, because those guys can at least move laterally and hold their own when guys get you on an island in isolation and try to score on you.
I got you. And we've seen with Doc Rivers that he's kind of a younger player averse at points. He wants to stick with the guys that he trusts more. So we'll see if that's a thing. It's a fair answer that it may be none of those guys. I was just very interested in that. And one more question for you. Again, we're talking with Austin Krell, covers the Sixers for the Painted Lines. Saw something on your Twitter feed today that I want you to have a chance to explain a little bit your thought process behind it. You put out a little poll of Nikola Jokic being possibly voted. Should he be voted as a guard on an all-NBA team? Because the news came out today that Jokic and Embiid will both be considered as either forward or center for that first-team All-NBA honors. What's the thought process behind him possibly being a guard on the ballot?
So, I guess first of all, I would probably say that my own opinion on the matter is I could be convinced either way.
Okay.
I think my line of thought is he's top eight in the average is the eighth most assists per game in the NBA. Top 13 is he's the only guy that's not a traditional guard. Jokic is the ball handler on pick and rolls. He brings the ball up the court quite often for Denver. If we're going to buy into this concept of a positionless basketball, who's to say that Nikola Jokic is not a guard? I mean, you hear on shows every week and podcasts like arguments all over the place about guys being at forwards. They're talking about Embiid being a forward. So if you're gonna pose those conversations, who has the right to dictate that Jokic cannot be considered a guard? I understand traditionally he would be a center. I would probably vote him as a center. But I think the solution here, because it would be ridiculous if Embiid wins MVP but then isn't the first team All-NBA center. Instead of doing that, forget positions, or even better yet, so that way you don't have to fight over who's the first team, second team, third team. Just make it who's the top 15 players in the NBA. I mean, any given season. Forget the tiers. Forget the first team, second team, third team. Just vote on the top 15 players in the NBA instead of trying to manipulate positions and whatnot. I mean, these guys have a lot of money on the line here to get these rewards.
Mm-hmm,
and
absolutely.
A lot of the time, the voting isn't that you're not qualified. It's that there's another guy who maybe has a different argument that's more appealing. And, I think it's more of an illustration that the voting process and the thought behind how those all-NBA votes come into play is flawed.
I got you. I don't necessarily disagree with you there. It's weird to consider like a 7-footer as a guard. I feel like it was more natural to see like Ben Simmons, for example, go the other way to be like from a point guard to being considered a forward. But the positionless basketball thing, it's a fair point about how the modern day NBA is. So I can't disagree with you there. I don't think they're going to switch it anytime soon, but I get the merit behind it. And hopefully we can just cross our fingers that Embiid and Jokic both get their deserved time on that first team this year, one as a forward, one as a center. Well, Austin, I appreciate it, man. This is a lot of fun. Thank you for taking time out of your Saturday. And hopefully we get a good game tomorrow night to end out this road trip.
No problem, Connor. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. That was Austin Krell, Painted Lines, contributes for USA Today on the NBA, covers the Sixers. Great follow on Twitter at NBA Krell. And he joined us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Comcast Business, every day in business is a big day. Let Comcast Business keep you ready for what's next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.